This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Can you hear me?
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. Good morning, Calvin. How are you, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. How are you?
All right, man. What are you going to do for New Year's?
You know, I'm not a very exciting. I'll probably just hang out at home, maybe watch a movie.
Hey, you sound like Sandy and I. Well, not Sandy. Sandy's probably going to be, you know, blazing.
Should I be able to hear you?
Yeah. Can you hear me? Sandy, you got a question mark look on your face, so I don't think you can hear us. But anyway, while we're trying to get Sandy together, Calvin, you know, I haven't done a New Year's thing and I don't know how long, man. Sandy, are you there?
I am here, yep.
All right, so you plan on blazing?
No, you know, in fact, my twin sons were born 49 years ago today, so I'll be going out to dinner with them, which is something that's been happening for many years.
You know, Sandy, it's unbelievable. You and I were talking a little earlier. Man, can you 2025?
You know, I was saying when I did my estate planning when I was about 50 for the first time, and I didn't even think I'd be around in 2025. I mean, it's like, you know, this is 2025. We know we pretty soon we'll just start saying 25 instead of 2025. Remember, for the last half of the 20th century, you'd say you were born, you know, like in 1976. You didn't say 1976.
Right.
So, yeah, I think we're there now in the 21st century.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I was thinking about it the other day, and man, you know, I know it's here, you know, and we're fortunate to be, well, we haven't made it yet, but, you know, anything can happen. But, man, to still be around in 2025, I remember so vividly, Sandy, the conversations about the year 2000.
Yeah, you know, I heard a comedian talking about this, but in 1985... when we talked about science fiction future years, we didn't even get out to 2025.
No.
We were talking about, you know, 2012 or 1999 or, you know, way into the future. Well, now we're way into the future.
You know, I still watched the old Twilight Zone stuff. Okay, you know, kick me. I told you, I'm a guy that still watches the 1940 movies. But I'm in that genre, and I'm watching the Twilight Zone movie the other day, probably, Sandy, from 1960s, mid-1960s, the Twilight Zone with Rod Serling. And they were into the future, and it was 1985.
And yeah. I'm like, well, you know, the 1984 was the name of the book, right? That was way into the future at one point. No, we're definitely way into the future, and it's not quite dystopian, but there's a worry.
Well, we're way into the future for you and I, not for Calvin.
Yeah, Calvin. Now, Calvin, when you're thinking about a science fiction future year, what year would you lock onto? Is it the 2040s, or how far ahead do we have to get beyond imagination?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's because we're kind of seeing where we could go very clearly, or if it's because past science fiction writers overestimated where we would be by now. But for me, when I think of like far future science fiction, I go to like 2500.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Do you want, hey, Calvin, you're not going to be around then. Not unless the science fiction guys are right about freezing people and waking them up again. You know, that could happen, I suppose.
You know, Sandy, you just, I couldn't help but think about technology and the advancements of it just in my lifetime. And yeah, it is just unbelievable.
Yeah, Dick Tracy's watch phone. You know, I can just put my Apple Watch up to my mouth and talk into it. So yeah. I guess we're there with that.
You know, I was looking at a guy answer a telephone the other day, and I looked in amazement. Hey, Sandy, the guy's, he's talking on a telephone.
Well, maybe Calvin would know how, but there are plenty of young people who would have no idea how to dial a telephone, right? The old dial phone.
Right.
Which have the
rotary thing. But you know,
But
you know, Sandy, I was, I was watching Calvin the other day pick up the phone and answer the caller. And man, I'm so far removed from somebody picking up a phone and actually, but Calvin does it every day because of the job he does. But when is the last time you picked up a telephone, Sandy, a handheld phone?
Well, we got rid of our landline. You know, I don't have a landline. What good is that?
But even if we had I still got a landline. You know, for nostalgia purposes.
What's a landline?
but I don't have a phone that you actually literally pick up and put up to your ear. It's a mobile thing that you can.
Where do you put your telephone for Earl?
Oh, you do. I guess you. Yeah, but it's where you can walk around with it. It doesn't have the attached cord to it.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Well, Sandy, come on. You're just exposing me. But you're right, man. I mean, it seems, but I remember when those things came in, Sandy, and they were the new technology. It means we've been around a while.
It definitely does.
Yeah, you know. But thinking about
Look, when I was growing up, my grandmother had a house on a lake and we had a party line. Meaning that there were multiple people on the same phone line. So you could easily pick it up and entertain yourself with somebody else's conversation. It wasn't polite, but it was certainly feasible.
Hey, Sandy, I saw that in a movie.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, I never thought it was real. But anyway.
Yeah, the phone would ring twice when it was my grandmother's line. It would ring once for the neighbors, and it would ring three times for the other neighbor. And so you knew who was on, and you could just pick it up.
But while we're, you know, walking down this nostalgic road, I remember so many people working at AT&T, and they really got paid well. And they were mainly women, and they worked on the where the phones calls would come in, the switchboards.
Switchboard, yeah.
And the phone rang. That wasn't so far out of my life cycle. I remember I knew people who worked at AT&T. They got paid handsomely during those times, then.
Well, yeah. Yeah, we had a switchboard at the law firm when I started at. You know, we had a woman who sat there connecting cords to holes and making calls happen. Yep, see the good old days.
Yeah,
we're never going back.
No, and then you look at, as you stated, I don't know, they've got a new, what do you call the phones that you have? I have an Android, but you have a
Apple phone.
An Apple iPhone. What is it, 16 now?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
and,
but 16 isn't that many years. So to think that what's happened to cell phones has happened in about 20 years, because the, you know, the 16 is the actual number of years since the first Apple phone.
But the technology in it has really advanced, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, my phone does much more than the mainframe computer did at the university I went to for business school. We used to have to take problems into the computer center so they could run like do things that our phone does instantaneously. We used to have to take the problem to the computer center and come back the next day to get the answer.
And so you have a what, 15?
I have a 16.
Oh, you got a 16. Okay. Well, you stay on top of technology.
I'm a nerd.
Well, look, I'm still struggling.
I mean, just look at me, for God's sake. Yeah.
I'm still struggling trying to figure out my Android from 2 years ago. So you know, you're that much further advanced than I am with it. But 855-752-4842. You know, it's Tuesday. It's New Year's Eve. You know, I'm with my co-host Sandy Williams, and we've got an awful lot that we're going to be discussing. Sandy, you know, Jimmy Carter finally expired.
Well, Jimmy Carter was an unbelievable guy, and obviously he had probably lived a little longer than he even wanted to live, you know, in terms of his life quality for the last year or two. But wow, he had a long and very fruitful life, and most of his accomplishments were post-presidency in terms of the things that he really ought to be remembered for. He probably had the potential to be a very good president, but he became the president in the midst of a lot of problems. The country was experiencing high inflation. We were suffering from a recession, something called stagflation, which incidentally is the very thing I fear we might be headed towards with our current president-elect enacts everything he wants to or has talked about enacting. But since his presidency, you know, Habitat for Humanity, peace accord in the Mideast. He's mediated a whole bunch of pieces, peace agreements around the world that were the result of wars in, for instance, the Balkans. He's done some wonderful things.
Established the Department of Education and all sorts of things that people don't really think about. We're going to touch base on a few of those. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show. 855-752-4842. Your thoughts on former President Jimmy Carter.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Maybe it's much too early in the game. Oh, but I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing New Year's? New Year's Eve. One whose arms are holding you so tight. When it's exactly 12 o'clock at night, welcoming in the new year. New year.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday, New Year's Eve, and I'm hanging out with my co-host Sandy Williams and you. So Sandy, I don't need the music.
Well, the music, actually, that's by a group called the Orioles, and that was the very first rendition of that song back in 1949. Everybody else covered it, but that actually is the original recording, and the Orioles were one of the early pop groups.
That was a pop group?
Kind of, yeah.
Well, I guess at that time, that would, you know.
1949.
Yeah. Well, when you think pop, well, anyway, I think about, you know. But anyway, Sandy, Jimmy Carter and a man, it's safe to say, was misunderstood as the president, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he kind of suffered through a presidency where he wasn't that highly regarded, although, you know, but for the Anderson-Lucy ticket that ran against him as a third party, he might have beaten Ronald Reagan in his race in 1980. But, you know, he suffered a number of situations that didn't bode well for him. The inflation, the stagflation, the Iranian hostage situation that went on for the last period, right surrounding the time of the election. And so, you know, he was a different kind of a personality. He had a big smile all the time and had a Southern accent. And we hadn't really experienced that in a president, maybe a very long time. He was defeated by Ronald Reagan and put in the rearview mirror, but while he was in the rearview mirror, he began to do marvelous things has, you know, won the Nobel Peace Prize, was constantly recognized for his humanitarianism, and I'm sure had the most remarkable post-presidency of any of our presidents ever.
You know, Sandy, I bet people had noticed Jimmy Carter led the cleanup maintenance crew that managed the nuclear meltdown in one of the experimental NRX reactors of the Atomic Energy of Canada. During the salvage exercise, he drew on all the years of experience he had with the U.S. Navy's nuclear submarine program. How many people knew that as a young man that he was involved in that? Carter and the cleanup crew literally put their lives in harm's way as they tried to clear the radioactive water that had flooded the reactor's basement. Jimmy Carter was a champion of racial integration in schools in America. The passion of his was seen beginning around the 1950s when he encouraged his community to be more tolerant and acceptable of racial integration. As a member of the state of Georgia Senate between 1963 and 1967, Jimmy Carter was involved in a host of social and economic programs. I don't want to get into all those different programs. En route to becoming the 76th governor of Georgia, Jimmy Carter defeated Carl Sanders at the Democratic primary. He went on to defeat Republican George Wallace in 1970 gubernatorial election. That had to be a major accomplishment, Sandy, in 1970 with George Wallace being the kind of guy he was, that Jimmy Carter could somehow, defeat him. En route to, riding on the themes of optimism, change, and equality, Carter secured a good win against incumbent President Gerald Ford in 1976 presidential election. The Ford administration struggled to shake of the fallout from the Watergate scandal of President Richard Nixon, hence providing a comfortable win for Democrats. In his first few days in office, Carter issued a presidential pardon proclamation, Sandy, to all Vietnam draft dodgers. That was a big deal.
He was a very courageous guy. He basically followed his best instincts and was not a particularly political character. He was a born again Christian. He was
a real one,
and I think that the evangelicals today should have him as up there on the wall as one of the heroes in terms of being living a Christian life in the manner that I think Christians would all want to live their lives. So, no, he was a real champion and a wonderful, obviously, in retrospect, a wonderful human being. And I think he's been recognized as that by everyone.
You know, the only thing, Sandy, that I would say is that he will go down, unfortunately. You'll hear people say one of the worst presidents in the history of this nation. I don't agree with that. You know about the Camp David Accords. You know about he established the Department of Energy, education. He did some great things, Sandy.
Well, actually, this worst president thing, the further you get out in history, the less likely it is that he would go down in that respect. I think the early reports on who's a good president or who's a bad president are much more filled with the emotions of current thinking and not the retrospective view of what someone accomplished. And actually, he accomplished a fair amount in his 4 years. He also was president during a very difficult 4 years. And I suspect, quite frankly, that 100 years from now, when they list the worst presidents, he won't even be on the list.
Very well said. 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday, and that means my co-host, Sandy Williams, and it's New Year's Eve. So, Sandy, we're going to be talking about current events, you know, as we move forward. 855-752-4842. You can join us on the Earl Ingram Show.
Here comes the jackpot question in advance. What are you doing?
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Heroicdeed.com.
Today, I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York. A city that doesn't sleep, and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I wanted to talk about the immigrants situation in this nation. That's kind of who we were. And a nation of immigrants that was always talked about, Sandy, that's what this nation was had come into existence being. And but somewhere along the road, Sandy, we have less tolerance for immigrants. Why?
Well, that's been an off and on phenomena for a very long time. You know, the Yellow Peril was something that was written about and talked about in the 1860s, 1870s, with all of the Asian labor that came into the country and was building our railroads And that seemed to be a political problem, even that drew political attention. And we began to throttle down on the number of immigrants we allowed. But, you know, immigrants have been welcome to this country. And some of it was because the country was empty. And much of the homesteading was done by immigrants. People were invited to this country so they could head out west to Wisconsin and Oklahoma and all the places that weren't very settled. In the 1840s and 50s and 60s, the Homestead Act was part of the railroad movement, and homesteading became a pathway for immigrants to come to the United States and immediately get land, be able to farm their own land. But they lived far apart from one another, and it wasn't until immigrants were coming to this country to man the factories in the Industrial Revolution that people began to be living one cheek by jowl with immigrants and worrying about the jobs that immigrants might take and the social upheaval that might result from the immigration waves. And so I had a professor in college, a guy named Oscar Handlin, wrote a book called The Uprooted in the late 1950s, won prizes for it. But it was about the fact that every wave of immigrant kind of stands on the shoulders of the prior waves of immigrants. And it's the most recent wave of immigrant is at the bottom of the totem pole. Well, not exactly the bottom of the totem pole, because the bottom of the totem pole has essentially been African Americans and since the slave era and post-slave era. But then you have these succeeding waves of immigrants. It was Irish immigrants. It was Italian immigrants. It was Polish immigrants. And each one of them looked down on the immigrants that followed them. And so we've had this kind of phenomena for quite a while. And the xenophobia of the early 1900s was very strident. And so it's a worrisome thing because our country is built on immigrants. And all these immigrants who earlier have been the bottom of the totem pole are now respected parts of our society, not even talked about. You know, in the 1950s, the Irish Americans were talked about as a bloc. You know, they were a voting bloc. They were an ethnic bloc. Nobody talks about Irish Americans anymore. So we do all get assimilated, but hopefully all the current waves of immigrants will also be similarly assimilated, and we can drop this hysteria, this xenophobia.
You know, Sandy, I'm not so sure that we'll get past it because, as you stated, the African American is still wallowing in that and have not been able to overcome it. And so, you know, when you look at this pushback against, again, the immigrants of color who have come to this nation, it's the history doesn't bode well that we're going to get past that.
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, the yellow peril is no longer perceived in quite the same way. I mean, I guess people who are visually identifiable as an ethnic group, I have a greater tendency to have a more long-term identification in that regard. But, you know, I think that the current xenophobia was whipped up politically and for the purposes of political expedience. We didn't have... When George Bush II set up the commission to try and solve the problems of immigration, it was not because there was a great deal of political pressure to do it. If there'd been political pressure, it might have been accomplished. It was simply that there was a recognition that we needed to create a more orderly process for the processing of all these immigrants who were wanting to enter the country. And it really wasn't until 2016, until Donald Trump began this process of whipping up a great deal of emotion about the movement, the amount of immigrants that were coming into the country. And now I think we're going to find that Donald Trump is going to be trying to manage expectation, because I think there's absolutely no likelihood that he will move forward with the kind of massive deportations that he was talking about during his campaign. It would be economic suicide, if not political suicide.
Well, you know, Sandy, as you stated, economic and political suicide, both of those things would occur. Because, when you look at the out in California, 50% of the people, farm workers, what we call illegal immigrants. Governor Evers here in Wisconsin stated, hey, not going to happen.
Our dairy and farm industry is just entirely dependent on immigrant labor. And so is a good portion of the construction industry, particularly the residential construction industry. And so, you know, this political fever was done for expedience. Donald Trump has now been elected. He can't stand for re-election unless somehow he tries to suspend the constitutional restrictions. And I think that we're going to find that much of what he talked about during the campaign was simply expedience. And the things that he's going to be enacting now are going to be much more relating to the legacy that he wants to leave. And I think that legacy is being framed for him by the billionaires that surround him. It's going to be stuff about deregulation. It's going to be stuff about lower taxes. It's going to be stuff about getting rid of the Department of Education. It's going to be a bunch of fairly radical things that are radical, not in the direction of helping the middle class, but rather setting the table for a government that is much more responsive and easier to operate within to corporations and wealthy individuals.
You know, Sandy, when we talk about immigrants, we have to say the illegal immigrants, because that's kind of who they're talking about. And so they exist. We know they're here. They've been here forever. They do a job. They serve a purpose. And yet they were, you know, as you stated, people were led to believe that these people were here and they were causing all this havoc, and totally dismissed the positive aspects of what they add and bring to the table in this country.
Well, yes, and I think that what we do need is a process that allows people who immigrate to this country to get processed and to achieve legal status much more quickly than they currently can, because illegal status does put workers into a situation where they have little or no leverage, okay, and they become very inexpensive workers. And it's much like the discussion now about these HB1 workers who come to the country and are sponsored by employers, and they come here because they have special expertise. It's this current, you know, the last couple of days where Elon Musk let Donald Trump know that we really shouldn't be deporting HB1 workers because they're important to the computer industry. And Donald Trump flip-flopped on that issue very quickly and has left Steve Bannon and others, I guess, kind of scratching their heads and worrying. But I think two things. One, I think that his flip-flop on that is evidence of what I just said, which is that I think Donald Trump is going to be much more expedient now about what it is he actually does as compared to what he was talking about on the campaign trail. And number two, I think he's going to be very responsive to the people who he holds in highest esteem, which are those people who are very wealthy, who are as wealthy as he wishes he was. And so, you know, Elon Musk had only to discuss with him the notion that HB1s were important for him to change his mind, contrary to the views of the leadership in MAGA, the other leadership in MAGA, which is to tell me, in fact, that there really is no leadership in MAGA other than Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump is the MAGA movement, and I think that the people who are committed to MAGA are going to be willing to follow Donald Trump wherever he takes them.
All right, let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Harold and Sandy. You were speaking about Jimmy Carter, a great humanitarian, but formerly the worst president till Joe Biden. The weakness that has been seen around the world during his presidency, we now see happen to Joe Biden. Afghanistan happened during
just to get back to something that maybe you don't know a lot about. You talk about Jimmy Carter being the worst president and his weakness. There was no war during the Jimmy Carter years. Okay, there was no war in the world to speak of. There was an Afghan invasion by Russia at that time. But the United States was not involved. I mean, I just think that people are so quick to say something like that about Jimmy Carter without a recognition of what it was that was actually done during his term in office or whether he was a good president or not. You know, the inflation and stagflation that he inherited, okay, from Gerald Ford was not something that he caused. And the high interest rates that occurred during his term were imposed by Paul Volcker and the Federal Reserve.
Go ahead, CJ.
Well, interest rates were at 18.5% when I.
Well, that's
yeah.
That's just what I pointed out. He inherited the high interest, the inflation, the inflationary economy that was stagflation. Okay, and if you understand stagflation, you understand that there are no tools to beat the recession in a period of inflation because the more money you pour into the economy, the higher the interest rates go. And so it was Paul Volcker during the term of Jimmy Carter who drove the interest rates up and finally terminated the inflationary spiral that had existed since the Arab oil embargo of 1973.
Yep, because he didn't know how to control the oil prices. And
no, you know, the oil prices... Now, wait. Just... You know, I think we shouldn't have this debate on the radio, CJ, but the fact is that oil prices weren't controlled other than by a cartel, which was initiated in 1973. If you can remember, the oil cartel of the Mideast was formed in 1973. And at the time of Jimmy Carter's election, the United States was importing a substantial portion of its oil. And Jimmy Carter actually worked hard to increase the production of oil, and he also moved to increase the production of coal as to try to make the United States more energy independent.
All right, 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday, New Year's Eve. That means my co-host Sandy Williams is on board. Sandy, you know, CJ is one of those guys who is going to continue to talk about what Jimmy Carter did not accomplish, how weak of a president he was, and he really, you know, you can fabricate anything you want to fabricate, Sandy. That doesn't mean it's true.
No, I mean, apparently there's a litmus amongst the MAGA that Jimmy Carter was the next worst and that Joe Biden has been the very worst. And we'll find out. I mean, who's the worst and best president is something that history reflects, and it takes history 30, 40, 50 years to digest the arc of history and to decide where someone sits in that course of history. But I'm pretty confident that neither one of these two presidents is going to go down into the category of worst president.
Well, and so let's do this. Let's go to Terry from the Northwoods. Hey, good morning to you, Terry. You say what?
Yeah, a couple things. I remember Jimmy talking about human rights. A lot of speeches on human rights, you know. And the second thing was, didn't they change how they figured consumer price index They used to figure it in with during Carter's presidency, food and fuel, and then they took it out later and left them. When they figured that CPI thing, they took those two items out of there to figure the inflation rate, I guess I want to say. Am I right?
No, the Department of Labor has a market basket that they used to determine the inflation rate and the CPI. And that market basket is changed over the years based on changes in habits of the American public. But food and fuel remains in that market basket for the analysis of CPI, but the ratios of things within that market basket have changed, and some of the other ingredients or some of the other things in that market basket that are considered have changed. But food and fuel remain there, but in different percentages.
Okay. And Sandy, about human rights, do you remember him talking about human rights? That's what sticks out to me. How many years later?
No, absolutely. He was a champion of that.
All over the world.
Yeah, and he actually walked the walk. You know, he didn't just talk the talk. And in fact, I think that was about the most remarkable thing about Jimmy Carter was that he always walked the walk. And he was a man of conviction, and he implemented his convictions. And maybe some of that weakened his capacity to get reelected because he was not a person of expedience, and he was not a person who acted like he was beholden to K Street and the money that might be there in politics. He had ethics that were beyond reproach, and it was reflected really by his wealth or lack thereof and his very slow accumulation of money after he was president.
You know, Sandy, even with that, you talked about his wealth or lack thereof, he was not a pauper, but he did not live his life in a manner of a guy who had some wealth. I mean,
the analysis of his net worth was that actually he was one of the poorest people coming into the presidency. He had a peanut business that had suffered. He had a net worth when he entered the White House, I just read, of about $300,000, which is like owning a home.
Right.
And it wasn't until after he was in the presidency that his net worth exceeded $1 million. And that was because of some of the 40 books that he wrote that actually were widely read and widely respected.
A guy who still lived in the house that he built with his own hands.
Yeah.
You know, he was an amazing man.
Well, you know, he got involved with Habitat for Humanity, and he actually went out on crews and built houses.
Yes.
With the Habitat for Humanity crew, which was a creature of his own invention.
Into his 80s.
Yeah.
He was still out with a hammer and nails. Yeah, he was just an amazing, amazing person in... You know, it just is more than frustrating that people, you know, want to still point the finger and talk about the negative aspects of it when the man clearly, Sandy, is somebody to uphold as a symbol of what humanity really should be about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really, a shame on CJ because I think that there's a time and a place for political discussion and political categorization, but all of this discussion today of Jimmy Carter as to whether his presidency was one of great achievement is nonsensical, number one. And number two, most of the things that have been pinned on him were not fairly done, okay? And he was really a one-term president based on a bunch of happenstance.
All right, 855-752-4842. Guys, hang on. We're gonna add into the equation this battle between Steve Bannon and Elon Musk and Doge. 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. That means New Year's Eve with my co-host Sandy Williams and you.
Come on and celebrate tonight, 'cause everything.
the national news cycle never stops. But it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.